Hey, church leaders, welcome to the Slingshot Group podcast. I'm your host, Tim Foote, CEO of Slingshot Group, where we build remarkable teams and healthy culture through staffing and coaching. But today on our episode, Brian Taylor, our VP of Worship and Creative Arts, is actually going to lead a very insightful conversation. Brian, tell us who our guest is today.
Yeah, I'm really excited about this one. Natalie Runyon at Raised to Stay, if you follow her on Instagram or on Facebook, an amazing conversation around an important topic about church hurt. We speak to leaders that are walking through it themselves, that have been the recipients of it, leaders that are leading teams that are dealing with this and processing it. And we get into some really tough topics that I think are important for the church to be navigating.
Yeah, we talk a lot about the kind of conversations we feel like you need to hear to help you lead your teams in the best way possible. Brian's been talking about having this conversation for quite a while. Brian, how did you get connected with Natalie?
Yeah, so Natalie and I ran into each other. We were both presenting at a conference earlier this year. We were on a panel together. And then just through some of the downtime, I listened to a little bit of her story she was sharing about this incredible platform that God has given her to minister to people in the church. And that's what sparked the conversation. And I started following her. And after that, I said, man, this is something that our people need to hear.
Well, we need to hear it. So let's jump in.
Well, hello, everybody. I am privileged to be joined today by Natalie Runyon. Natalie, thank you so much for being a part of our conversation today.
Thank you for having me, Brian. This is incredible.
Let me ask you this, because I'm just going to jump right in, if that's okay with you. You've got an ever-increasing social media presence. You've got a book that's coming out in July. I'm interested to know, though, like, where did this all begin for you? Like, how did you get involved in processing this conversation around those that have been hurt and maybe just disappointed by the church?
It's only been about 4 years that I really felt the Lord give me this phrase, raised to stay. And it came at my own time of wanting to quit ministry. I was 40. I had really just walked through another season of really harmful, toxic spiritual abuse and leadership. And it came to a point where I had to ask myself, like, do I still want to keep doing this? Do I want to continue to be in ministry after, you know, 30 years of being a pastor's kid and then another 20 years of, you know, being a pastor's kid and in ministry myself? It felt like just 40 years felt like this good holy number to tap out. Like, if I'm going to quit, let's just stop at 40 and call it a day. And I was just wrestling with the Lord. Like, if this is your church, if this is what it's like to work with people that call themselves Christians, like, I don't want to do it anymore. Let me be a Starbucks barista. Let me do something that's not this intense all the time. And really, as I began to just mourn, watching my own friends quit, watching talented worship leaders and speakers and writers kind of leave the church to go pursue other things, I started asking myself the question, why? Why are we all coming collectively to this point? And I started writing on Instagram these like black boxes with white writing, my own journey of wanting to quit. And from there, it's escalated to where it is.
It's incredible. You know, in the work that we do in staffing and coaching, of course, I myself have heard a countless number of leaders give me a million and one reasons why they're walking away and why they're considering walking away or how they've been hurt. And I wish that your story was unique, but it seems to me that we find ourselves in a day and age where this has really become a forefront issue. And I'm interested to know from the journey that you've been on, because I can imagine that there are plenty of people that have been opening up to you in conversations and in direct messages. What are the reasons that you think right now church leaders are facing this issue, and it seems more than ever? And then also, is it new? Is this something that has just popped up recently? Because for those that might be watching, it seems that way.
I thought maybe it was because I started to see it all the time on social media. But I realized if we go back to 2 Corinthians, I believe it's in chapter 11, Paul gives us this laundry list of everything that's happened to him while he's been in ministry. He's been beaten by rods. He's been shipwrecked 3 times. He has been lost in the wilderness. He's been lost at sea. But he says something at the end of that line of scripture that says, I have been betrayed by my enemies and I have been betrayed by my friends. happens.
Wow.
And I realized right there, he's telling us we're going to get hurt. He's saying, if you choose this life of ministry, if you choose a life of taking up your cross and following Jesus, it's not going to be a cakewalk. And so, no, I don't think betrayal is new. Obviously, Jesus and Judas teach us that. I don't think betrayal's new. I don't think disappointment's new. I think social media has brought it even more to a forefront. I think that a lot of things that the church was not sensitive to, now we are suddenly becoming sensitive to it.
What are some of those things? What are some of the things that you would say we weren't sensitive to that we are now?
I think one thing is how hard our pastors are working. You know, I think that some of the things I'm hearing in the Instagram group that we have on Raise to Stay is I'm burned out. I'm tired. I'm exhausted. You know, I'm working 50, 60 hour weeks, and COVID really gave us this look at what life was like not working those hours. So I think the church is finally kind of starting to have this conversation of, is our staff healthy? When you start asking those questions and people are honest, then you start to see these things surface like, no, actually we're burned out and we're feeling neglected, or we have a celebrity culture here that's causing us to lose people because they don't want that anymore. And we could make a laundry list from politics to how we treat LGBTQ community, the whole racial divide that we've seen in our own country. So I think those are the things the church is just now starting to listen to, and you're getting a mob of voices ready to talk.
Yeah, man, that's so good. The advent of social media, the social media age, makes things, even something like the revival that happened at Asbury, right? It used to be, it would take stretches of time for news to break out. I mean, you're talking years, if not decades. We'd look back and see, oh, wow, there's where God was moving. But in this day and age, nearly immediately, the entire world was brought into what's happening. And so in this instance, I imagine it's a bit more exposing. And more quickly, so people are more readily able to see it, address it, and have an opinion about it.
And that goes for moral failures of leaders. That goes for any type of an exposure. I mean, now we've got documentaries and you have immediate reaction to some things that 20 years ago would have taken a year to come out. We're seeing it out in the news a day after it's happened. So Everybody's under a microscope. In some ways, we've put ourselves under there. In other ways, we can't escape it.
So one of the things, and one of your black boxes that I saw, because I do follow you and I love what you post, I love how you speak to as many sides of the story as you can. But one of the things that I love that you said is, we acknowledge that there's been abuse and hurt in the church, but we are more interested in healing and using our testimonies to evoke change, not retaliate to seek revenge. And that's such a different stance than maybe what a lot of us see on social media. And I would wonder, how did you land there?
Being a pastor's kid, we saw so much. My family was deeply wounded by the church my senior year of high school. And I was supposed to go to a Christian college, and I didn't. I ended up going to a public university and majoring kinesiology when I thought that I was going to be a youth pastor. And so I've had to mourn a lot. I've had not only to mourn what happened to my mom and dad, but I've had to mourn what's happened in my own life and in my own ministry. And that's a lot of mourning for one to do. But I've also been around long enough to watch what happens when God finishes what he starts. And in a lot of these relationships where things were broken for my family and I, we've seen the Lord come full circle and bring some sort of healing or restoration. And it's taken 5, 10, 15 years. And when I am willing to contend for reconciliation, contend for unity, which the word says that where there is unity, it commands the Lord's blessing. When I'm willing to contend for that unity, the Lord will provide some sort of a resolution. And if we're willing to contend for that in our own churches, to contend for healthy culture and to contend for healthy relationships, we will see revival, because that's the heart of the Father. But if we're constantly going for revenge, we're going to have outcomes just like Saul. Right? We're going to see ourselves on our own sword. And that's what I want to see people living and continuing to do the work God has started in them and not giving up before the miracle.
Man, that's so good. And I want to talk about the people that are the stayers, which I love. And we're going to talk about that in just a moment. But I'm wondering, as you've learned from your own journey and the journeys that you have helped other people advocate for their own healing and dealing, like dealing with the church hurt, what are some practical steps that you would encourage people listening, if they're dealing with church hurt, if they're grappling with it, they're struggling with it, what are some practical steps that you think that they can take to deal with it well?
I mean, we have to go to the obvious ones that a lot of times the church rejects just as a policy. And one of those is counseling. I grew up in a denomination that acted as if you needed a counselor that you didn't trust the Lord. And counseling is one of the best ways for us to be able to process our pain, to be able to sit in non-threatening environments where people don't know our church, don't know our staff, and listen to us say the thing out loud, and to help us discern if we're being abused, if we're being hurt, or if we're carrying offense. And those three words are interchangeable right now throughout the entire church community. So having a third party kind of present to say, oh no, you're right, you need to get out of there, that's spiritual abuse. Or actually, no, you're just still wounded from things of your past, let's press into that and let's heal, is so important. And I would also say medication. There are a lot of people in ministry, as we've seen through these suicides, this just senseless loss of life, where if we're dealing with depression, anxiety, bipolar disorder, we have to trust that God gave us doctors and medication for a reason. And so I'm interested in seeing how we can partner with the Holy Spirit and with medical professionals to make sure that we're taking care of ourselves. Finally, mentorship and discipleship is honestly the greatest gift we have in the local church. And I know that a lot of people have had Sauls in their lives, they've had Judases in their lives, and they're like, I don't want to trust anyone again. But I can promise you that for every Saul that has hurt you, there are three or four Pauls who want to love on you. And just as he had Timothy, and he would say about Timothy to all the churches, you're going to love Timothy, this is the greatest guy that I've ever known, there are mentors and disciplers in our churches who want to speak that way about us. And we need to give them the opportunity to raise us up and help grow us up and sit in the trenches with us in ministry.
It sounds like I hear you saying that there is potential for us to bring things that have nothing to do with our church environment into the church environment and see that, see what's happening to us through that filter and through that lens. And I think you're right. That's something that we don't often consider as leaders, that part of what we're bringing to the picture is ourselves. It's our experiences. It's our vantage point. It's our perspectives, our trauma. You said something that I want to double click on if we can. You said that there are words that are interchangeable in the current conversation. You hear people talk about hurt and abuse and trauma. How do you help people differentiate that?
It's so challenging not being a professional licensed counselor. And I think a lot of pastors would fall into that category as well. They have staff and congregants coming in using this language. And because they're not licensed to actually be able to diagnose abuse or trauma, we're left with whatever story we are given. And as leaders, I think I can say this. One of my favorite leadership coaches says that our ego is not our amigo. And so when we do see things through the lens of our ego, a lot of times we will come in with these grand stories of kind of what our perception of how something went down. So it's really hard for pastors and leaders to discern if someone has truly been abused or if they're carrying things in that are actually really easy to fix. There just needs to be some leadership training and things like that. So when someone sits down with us and says, I've been abused by the church, we have to unpack that for more than one coffee meeting. We need to sit down with people and ask deep questions and be better listeners than we have been. Church abuse could be anything from a narcissistic leader who has spiritually abused someone using the word of God against them, to rape and all the things that we're seeing coming out through church too, the hashtag movement. And we have to know what we're hearing. Sometimes you're going to call 911 because it's that bad. And other times it's more 411. You need to understand this happened to me to collect information on how I'm going to behave as a leader. And so it has to be a conversation that's longer than just a sit-down coffee meeting. Like, we need to be digging deeper to find out where that trauma began and how we can help walk people through healing, not fix them in one meeting and then hope that they're going to be okay.
So what's at stake here? Like, help us paint a picture, right? Obviously, this is a big issue, right? And I think there are some personalities that would rather wait and say, oh, I'm just going to wait kind of passively until it gets better. But I get the sense that this is an issue that we actually need to be proactive about. So paint the picture for us, for that leader who's wrestling, like, what's at stake here?
When I was in Haiti, right after the earthquake that hit, I believe it was around 2013, it was the largest mass catastrophe to happen to Haiti, but it was like the second largest in the world. There were 300,000 lives lost. And as we were driving through Port-au-Prince, I looked around and realized it was mass catastrophe everywhere, homes demolished, and we're in the tap-tap, and they pull up next to this mass burial site that was protected by this large iron fence. And it was this beautiful rolling hills of where they had buried those that had been lost. And I look over at the gate, and there's these beautiful Haitian children in their Sunday best. It's 120 degrees. They are in suits and dresses and bows, and they're sitting at the gate. And I asked the guy, I said, what are they doing? Are they here to pay respects? Like, what is this? And he said, no, they're there waiting for their parents. And I said, well, don't they know that their parents aren't alive? And he goes, every single Sunday, they climb through the rubble of their city in their Sunday best, and they wait at the gate for their parent. Even though they know their parents are not alive, they have hope that their parents are coming back. And the Lord said, I want to give you a picture that this is the church. This is the deconstructed church, that we are now at ground zero of a massive catastrophe that is deconstruction, to the point that we don't even recognize a church anymore. But yet there are still spiritual orphans, spiritual sons and daughters climbing through the rubble of our wreck to wait for hope. They're waiting for hope. They're waiting for someone to emerge out of the death and to remind them that there is life. And that is what's at stake. If we do not rebuild, if we do not meet these spiritual orphans where they are, we are going to lose not just Christians, but we are going to lose those who are seeking salvation, seeking Jesus. And so we have to get our act together so that we can continue with the Great Commandment and the Great Commission.
That's so good, Natalie. And man, what an incredible picture you painted there. And I think it's a good segue now. And we've talked a lot about the leader. We've talked a lot about the person that is experiencing church hurt kind of as a recipient. Now, let's also talk about the people that are leading them. So we're speaking to church leaders who are building and leading teams right now, navigating these really, I hesitate to use the word unprecedented, but it is in fact an unprecedented time in the life of many churches, navigating leaders that are coming into awareness of what's been going on in their own hearts and minds and teams. So let's speak to them for a moment. How can church leaders and communities begin to create a safer, more healing environment for those who've experienced some of the things that we're talking about today?
Well, one thing, leaders need to be accessible. And if we don't have leaders who are willing to get into the trenches and roll up their sleeves and do the hard work with the people that they're hiring, if they're not willing to do the work that they're hiring people to do, you already lose so much relational equity with those individuals. And I don't know about you, but if you've been on a missions trip, you know the conversations that happen while you're digging trenches, while you're building a wall, while, you know, you start to ask about family and you're asking about what are your dreams, because you're on that wall for 8 hours in this hot sun. And I think that leaders having the ability to be accessible is such a win, because then when we do have wounded volunteers and wounded teams, we're in touch with who they are, and we're able to step in and either refer them to somebody who can help or develop a deeper relationship where they'll want to tell us more. So I think accessibility, I think vulnerability. I don't know where the church thought that by acting like we all were perfect and had it together, that we were doing anybody any good. But when we lack that vulnerability, we don't gain vulnerability from other people. So opening up ourselves, not to give away everything, but enough that people see, oh, they're not perfect. Like, they struggle too. Those are the two that I think we're lacking still. I still think that leaders think they can hide away in a green room and still be able to shepherd people. But I always say, you can't write songs for a church you don't know, and you certainly can't lead people you don't know. And then that vulnerability of just saying like, you know what, I don't know the answer to this, but I just want to empathize with you. I'm not going to sympathize in your ego. I'm not going to sympathize in the lies that you're believing, but I will empathize with where you are and sit with you in that tension.
That's so good. And, you know, you said something that made me think of how likely leaders are to run to solutions when what oftentimes we need is just someone to sit with us and hear us out, you know, and to process and to be present. And in the pace of ministry life, that is really hard to obtain, the pace that allows you to be present. It requires a ton of intentionality. And what do you say to the leader then that's trying to make sure that the sins of the past are not repeated in finding their place, finding their pace with the teams that they're leading? What have you found has been helpful in your own journey to create that authenticity, to create that vulnerability?
Well, you have to like play hard and rest hard, right? So there has to be this opportunity for people to experience the Lord and the Holy Spirit in a way that's, you know, this just authentic way. But also that kind of changes the script. You know, we're used to just showing up and just cranking out, you know, tasks and then saying, well, this has to be done. And I think for a lot of us, that's a coping mechanism when we feel insecure. It's like, well, I just need to prove my worth and then everybody will be fine. And really it's like turning the Titanic. It takes 5 miles to turn a ship in the ocean. And some of us are trying to do it in a mile and we're flipping it. We're flipping the boat because we're just trying to prove our worth. And I think the less we try to prove our worth and the more we try to make people feel that they're worth something, then all of that other stuff will begin to work out. But I just think we do take ourselves so seriously and people aren't expecting us to like be the end all be all to their problems. They just want to know that they're seen, that they're heard, that they're loved, and that they're valued. And we can do that playing together and working hard together, but there's a huge need for balance.
Really good. So I love that you're raised to stay, not raised to leave. And there's a lot of people that talk about what it looks like to leave well. In fact, in the work that we do, we're helping candidate steward transition all the time. But there's something to be said, not just for leaving well, but for staying well. And what encouragement would you give to the people that find themselves like you did saying, you know what, I'm not going to give up. How can they stay well?
Well, if Raised to Abide looked good on a t-shirt, I would have called this ministry Raised to Abide, because really it's John 15. I'm going to abide in Jesus and then I'm going to be pruned and I'm going to stay and I'm going to remain. And that word is said, I think like 19 times, like in that script, in that passage, abide, stay. And really what that means is that no matter what happens to me, I'm going to remain in Jesus. I'm going to stay with Jesus. And the whole goal is not to win some longevity award. When we get to heaven, we're not going to be given 25 and 50 year awards for being at a church, one building, for 25 or 50 years. What we're going to hear is, well done, good and faithful servant, for abiding in Christ, for staying connected to the vine. The goal is to produce good fruit. So when we find ourselves in a situation where we're no longer producing good fruit, then we have to ask ourselves, am I staying well? Am I abiding well if I'm not producing good fruit? Am I allowing the Lord to prune me? Which is why I say that accountability is not church hurt, because there's going to be times where we're going to be pruned by one another, by leadership, by the Lord. And that's going to help us produce that good fruit to be able to stay well. And then sometimes we have to be able to just know, hey, I'm not leaving, I'm going. I'm going into a new season where I'm going to produce good fruit. And what I've left behind is actually good seed for the sower to continue to work and trust that they're going to finish well and I'm going to start well.
You know, in my mind, as you're talking, I'm picturing the leader who is ready to leave. They've identified what you've been talking about. And what they're struggling with is anything going to be left of me when I leave? Am I going to be worth anything? Am I going to be of any value to any team anywhere with all that I've done? Even after doing the hard work of healing, they're wondering, am I going to have a place in ministry? Is there a spot left for me? What would you say to them?
Well, all of us are going to be very tempted to wrap up who we are and what we do. And we have to daily remind ourselves that we are God's child. We are not worship leader. We are not pastor. We are not writer or leader. We are a child of God, and that is his first priority is our hearts and our spirit. And he isn't as interested in what we do for him in as he is that we're abiding in him. And so we have to remember that our identity cannot be rooted in what we do. It's easier said than done. And I've had plenty of temper tantrums where I have been kicking and screaming spiritually on the floor, telling God that I don't like what he's doing with me and that I don't like this new season and I don't want to be doing these things. But knowing that whenever he moves us, it's usually a setup for promotion. And that if we're willing to surrender what our thoughts were that this season was going to look like, or our expectation, or even our pride, and lay that down and say, "Be it unto me as you have said." Mary was probably not expecting to give birth to the Son of God, but she was obedient and willing. And I think if we don't know anything else, we know that God honors obedience and that he will always meet our needs according to his riches and glory, not according to the poverty of our faith. So sometimes we are going to go in blind and wonder if we have anything to give. And we're going to be shocked when he takes those loaves and fishes and feeds a multitude. It's going to blow us away because we didn't think we had it.
That's amazing. Thank you. Thank you for sharing that. And I hope those that are listening that may find themselves in that place hear you loud and clear. The resounding answer to that is yes, because our place is found in God. Like you said, yeah. It's abiding in him. That's where the joy is. That's where the peace is. That's where the hope is. And that's mm-hmm. where our identity is. And Natalie, you've got a book coming out telling a little bit of your story, I think, and processing some of these topics. Tell us about the book and when we can get it and what that looks like.
It's called Raised to Stay, Persevering in Ministry When You Have a Million Reasons to Walk Away. And it has four sections, the hurt, the hard, the hope, and the holy. And I dive into the disciples and the Apostle Paul. I tell some of my story, but really pointing people back to Jesus, that we all could walk away from this. And honestly, Jesus could have called 10,000 angels to get him down off that cross too. Like, I am sure that even the Son of God thought about, is it worth it? Is this really going to be worth it? But that what we thought was going to be the end of us is actually the beginning of a resurrection. And so this book is a book of hope. I'm not coming down hard on anyone. I'm not Taylor Swifting people and naming names. I truly am trying to unify the church to remind us that the church is God's idea, not ours. And so whatever he chooses to create, I want to be part of. So let's not give up before the miracle.
Well, that's so good. And I cannot wait to read it when it comes out. Natalie, thank you so much for being a part of the conversation today and for dropping some wisdom for us as we navigate what we've identified as a really tense and tough and difficult thing to do. I wonder if people want to stay up to date with what's going on in your world, how can they find you on social media? Tell us a little bit about the ways they can follow along with you.
Our Instagram community, I call you guys my stayers. We are almost 100,000 strong. So I am so proud of this army that the Lord is raising up. You can follow us at Raised to Stay. And then also on Facebook, we've got a private group, Raised to Stay, that is for people to be able to communicate in more of a intimate way. And then I have a public group under Natalie Runyon, R-U-N-I-O-N, that is more of the public environment, just like our Instagram family.
Fantastic. Natalie, thank you again so much for your time today. It's been a pleasure.
Oh gosh, you guys, thanks for having me.
What a powerful conversation, Brian. And I want to say to leaders listening today, don't let this be a podcast episode you just listen to. Respond and react. Do an inventory of your team. Talk to your team about this. I mean, we are seeing church hurt in unprecedented levels, aren't we, Brian? And what would you say some of the strategies that we see that are working for overcoming church hurt or addressing it at least?
Yeah, I think, Natalie and I talked about this, giving voice and creating safe environments for team members to talk about and process what they're dealing with, how they're navigating it. You know, one of the things that I'm seeing with the leaders that I get to engage with is as this conversation comes more out in the open, people are doing more emotional and spiritual work, and they're uncovering things that they didn't even know existed inside of themselves. And so how do you process that while carrying the burden of a platform, the burden of ministry? You know, so creating those safe environments for people to process. And then secondly, I think it's important important to consider getting some outside perspective and voice to it. It's one of the things that I know we love to do when we get on site with the churches that we're serving, is to offer some outside perspective in a way that can help the leaders and their organizations shape a better way forward.
That's helpful. Dysfunction left unchecked, we know, turns toxic, and toxic turns into church hurt, and left in the darkness, it thrives. It thrives in isolation. It's time to talk about it and shine the light on it. So my encouragement to leaders listening today is invite your team to listen to this and then have a conversation. What are the things that we might not be talking about right now that are lurking in the shadows that we need to address? Be open, create a sharing environment. If you got something out of this conversation today, please share it with another leader. Leave a comment, subscribe in Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to your podcast if you haven't already done that. And meanwhile, stay curious and reach for the remarkable.